morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Morning and welcome to 2006. For most of us, this is supposed to be a time of new commitments. Losing weight, no more cigarettes, watch that spending. But for some families in West Virginia, the year began with the challenge of understanding and forgiveness. I doubt that many of you have ever been awakened from your nightmare, only to find the relief washed away by the horror that it was all true. For a dozen families in a small West Virginia town, that is how their new year began. An explosion inside the town's coal mine trapped a group of men, requiring trained rescuers to do their best. But time becomes the biggest enemy in a mining rescue, and a key question here is, did the help take too long to arrive? Because that's what everything comes down to now, doesn't it? Who is to blame? Although 12 men are dead from an accident in their very deadly profession, shouldn't we be looking for someone to blame? Wealthy mine owners probably didn't put enough money into the safety of their workers. Our Republican leaders allowed these rich mine owners to take home extra profit rather than creating laws or fines that showed interest in the well-being of working class. The liberal media incorrectly reported that all of these miners had been rescued, intolerably bringing grief and sadness to these families twice. Because blame is what we do best. Pointing fingers, finding a way to make others responsible, removing our responsibility from the equation. Is it no longer possible that accidents happen? Personally, I pray that nothing this heartbreaking ever happens to me or my family, because if it does, like these folks in West Virginia, I will be challenged with the job of forgiveness and understanding. Realizing that while my grief may feel greater than others, it doesn't mean I'm the only one to be suffering. Because isn't that what blame has become about? Making someone else feel more heartbreak than yourself? Whether emotionally or financially, the greater test than proving someone else responsible is spreading forgiveness and understanding. May those families pass this test. All right, 11:05 here on the wake-up call, January 8th. I know most of you slept in last week, but hopefully you were here because we had a lot of fun. But this week's show should be equally tasty. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to talk about student self-governance. A couple different issues sort of tie in their way together here on the program. We're going to talk about a new school that's being put together down in Fluvanna County, the Friendship Sudbury School, based on a what would be the proper phrase there, Brenda? A theory on education?
More than a theory, since it's been tried and true for 40 years.
Okay, so we'll be talking about the Friendship Sudbury School being put together in Fluvanna, and we're going to bring into that Brian Campbell's, I always say Brian Campbell, and then I wonder if it's Brian Wheeler, and I never know which way to go there, because usually I have his business card in front of me. But we're going to talk about an Albemarle County School Board member's proposition of adding a non-voting student member to the county school board. So a lot of this program today has to do with self-governance of students in the school system. 11:06 here on the wake-up call as we get into this. Brenda Callen, is that the proper pronunciation?
That's Callen.
Brenda Callen. That's mistake number two for the hour. Let's keep up our resolution of single-digit mistakes on the program this year. Brenda is one of the volunteers at the Friendship Sudbury School. And when is the school expected to open? When is your goal?
Well, we'll be starting part-time very soon in February, full-time in September of this year.
Full-time in September of this year. And how many students?
Our goal is to have at least 30 students when we start out in September. You know, we have around 8 to 10 right now.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about the Friendship Sudbury School. Your goal, your role there is what?
My role,
yeah.
Staff member currently, which would include a lot of administration, particularly for a new school, and being there for the students, being there as a consultant, information. We don't have teachers, we have staff people. So adults there may not be doing a lot of teaching every day. They may be doing a lot of whatever comes up.
So role play, different roles for different adults in the school. And I find that interesting. And one of the more interesting aspects of the Sudbury program, and I guess I'm going to try and find my favorite and most correct way to approach the name, theory, program, et cetera, and you're welcome to help me along with that as a couple other guests that we'll have on by phone today, is that there aren't any teachers, at least as most people think of a teacher by the more traditional educational system. Stu and I are here in the program, in the studio today, trying to see if we can get this funky setup that always goes along with having guests by phone. We're going to try this method, and hopefully it works. But if it doesn't, well, you know, we'll try method plan B. All right. Our other guest is Sue. What's Sue's last name?
Frankel Strait.
Oh, I'm not even going to attempt that. Sue, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. We're going to get Stu to turn up the volume just a touch. Sue, there we go. That's mistake number three. I'm off to a really rocking start today. Sue, what is your role at the Friendship Sudbury School?
I'm a staff person also, as well as a parent of three of the kids there. And I guess my role is just to be present, to assist with any needs that the kids have, and to help create a positive culture.
To create a positive culture. Well, the positive culture here today needs to be to get that little buzz out of the background. So we'll continue to work on that. Now, I would like to both of you, Brenda and Sue, how you got involved in this. What prompted the idea to create the school, and what was the need for it?
If for us personally, we're both parents of children that we've been homeschooling, from the beginning. They're preteens and younger, and our children we educated them in this way as homeschoolers, but they needed more contact with more children daily, a way to have core relationships with people and access to more adults, instead of just once a week here or there with this and that group. So, as homeschoolers, this is something that's a need, particularly as our children are growing older. So that's what motivated us particularly.
So, Sue, am I hearing this correctly, that one of the questions that's often asked to homeschooling parents is that it's how do you teach the social aspect, and that's what the Sudbury program is designed to help do?
Well, I feel that I think homeschooling parents are also able to meet those needs. Some of our kids really wanted that consistency and, in a sense, a place to have a community that they had chosen and that they had a part in the decisions of. And I think, for me, that's what really attracted me to the Studbury model, is that the kids, in addition to choosing what they're going to learn and how they spend their days, they're also responsible for the running of the school. And so they meet with the staff and take part in all the decisions that are made, and that's important for them to feel that they're respected in the decisions that they make about their education and how their daily lives go.
Now we are here on the Wake Up Call talking about student self-governance. We're starting the program talking about the Friendship Studbury School, which will be opening in Fluvanna County soon and going to, what we can call a full-time program in the fall. We have Brenda Cowan. We have Sue Frankel-Strait. Did I even come close to getting that right?
That was great.
And both of whom are volunteers and, administrators at the school. And a little later on in the program, we're going to give a call to Mark McCraig, who is at the Fairhaven School in Maryland, a Studbury program that's been around a little longer, and can talk about how things work rather than just how we hope them to work in the Fluvanna School. feel free to dial us up. It is 979-0919 if you're out in Fluvanna or a little further away and need the toll-free number, 1-877-967-6762. Brenda and Sue answering questions as best they can, and any comments that you would like to make as well. Ladies, I'd like to know, in your opinions, what makes the Studbury program better than a traditional system?
I'd say one of the big things is there's so many more limitations on children in a traditional education. And in a Studbury education, the limits are more what they place on themselves. And in a traditional education, it's what's being offered, you know, what they're told they should be learning, what their interests are isn't really that important in traditional schooling. But in a Studbury school, you know, the sky's the limit in a way.
Now, Sue, I think one of the things that you have each mentioned but really hasn't been directly addressed here on the program today is the fact that the kids, all of the, do you call them students?
Yeah.
Okay. All of the students at the school, there aren't any teachers, like was already mentioned, so they sort of set their own agenda. Is that correct?
That's right.
All right. So I'm sure that the first thought in a lot of listeners' heads is, how in the world do they get anything accomplished? You know, wouldn't you sit around all day and play video games or go on the internet or run around in the backyard, you know?
Right.
Play, you know, just climbing trees and playing tag?
Sure. And I guess, I think one of the unique things about a Studbury model of education is that these pursuits are valued just as much as sitting in front of a textbook. And so the idea is that, you know, just kids are not a different species from adults. And most of us don't spend most of our days, you know, sitting in front of a video game or sleeping all day. But we also play, you know, and we work, we talk on the phone, we socially interact with other people, and we make the decisions about what we need to do, how much of each of those things we do each day and when we do them. And I think the Studbury education prepares kids to be able to make those decisions for themselves as adults, because they start practicing that from the time they get to school. And certainly there may be kids who will spend, especially kids coming out of a situation where they're more restricted, you know, suddenly given this freedom to choose how to spend their day, might have to try out all the things that they, you know, weren't considered learning before. But eventually, kids find their passion and follow their passion, and they're very serious about it because there isn't any reason for them not to be.
What's the difference from the Studbury school from being homeschooled then? I mean, other than homeschooling in a group. I mean, I'm getting that sort of feel, is that this is a lot of, you know, homeschooling parents and kids coming together in a group to do it in one area rather than doing it individually. Is that a fair assessment?
Probably not quite. For one thing, in most of the Sudbury schools, it seems we've heard that a majority of them aren't even from a homeschooling background. So, the difference is it's daily being with the same group of people. So learning from a larger variety of people daily, and not necessarily as many restrictions as one might have homeschooling. It depends on the setup each family has at home. There may be many more restrictions than would be at a Sudbury school as far as what type of learning happens and the structure of it.
Right, I think that's a big part of our conversation today is the difference between, not just between a public school and the Sudbury program, but the difference between a private school and homeschooling, because the Sudbury program is indeed a private school, correct?
That's right. Uh-huh.
And so there are different, in fact, even fewer requirements for a private school than a public school or a homeschooling program. Is that also correct?
That could be, particularly for a traditional school, public school, yes, and somewhat sometimes less restrictions than homeschooling.
And Sue, I'll address this one to you so we don't lose you, since you're not, I can't see you. I need to make sure that I'm keeping everybody involved in the program. Homeschooled students have a variety of tests and other requirements that they need to provide the state that the student is, being taught the proper things at the right level. But in a variety of private schools, not just a Sudbury school, but at a variety of private schools, that's not necessarily the case. Did I do my homework properly?
Well, it depends on the kind of homeschooling. We have a religious exemption, and we don't have to do any tests or anything like that. And I think, as far as I can see, the tests are based on, some standard that was set someplace for use, in these schools that are trying to achieve something that they decide has to happen on a time schedule. My experience with my kids, and my son's almost 13, is that they eventually learn most of the same things that the public school kids do, and they might not learn them at the same rate. Some things they learn 5 years before, some things 5 years after, but, and from homeschooling kids that I've met and Sudbury school kids I've met, by the time they're ready to make their way in the world, they can read, they can write, they can do math, and these kids who've had the ability to make decisions and choices about what they really want to do are also ready to move on without feeling like they have to have someone, putting a schedule in front of them all the time.
What is the religious exemption that's been asked for and given?
It just says that you believe that it's part of your religious belief system that you should be educating your kids at home. And so you apply to the local school board for permission to educate your kids. And I think they have some requirements as to the teaching qualifications of the parents. It varies from state to state. In Virginia, I think you have to have a bachelor's degree. But I'm not sure about that.
All right, 11:20 here on the Wake Up Call. As we talk about student self-governance, we're starting the program with a discussion about the Friendship Sudbury School, school being put together, hopefully opening full-time this coming September in 2006. Brenda Cowan, Sue Frankel-Strait here representing the school on today's program. 11:21 on the Wake Up Call. Let me tell everyone the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia. And the Shenandoah Valley, mostly cloudy today, highs 45 to 50, partly cloudy tonight, lows 35 to 40, partly cloudy tomorrow, highs 55 to 60. Right now it's partly cloudy across the listening area, 40 in the valley, 41 in Lynchburg, 43 in Richmond on the new 103.1, and 41 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And additional support today also coming from the Bluebird Cafe, 625 West Main Street. The Bluebird serves fine dining, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week. from the world-famous Bluebird Caesar salad served with chicken, shrimp, or beef with blue cheese, to the 12-ounce New York strip with Bluebird mashed potatoes and sautéed fresh vegetables. It's the Bluebird Cafe between UVA and the Downtown Mall on Main Street in Charlottesville. All right, back in action here on today's program. A little later on, pretty shortly actually, probably about 11:30, we'll call Mark McCraig, who's with the Fairhaven School in Maryland, a longer-running Sudbury school, and get into a few questions with him that he may be a little more up-to-date on. But let me toss one of these out to each of you, Brenda and Sue. There's no preset or enforced curriculum, right?
That's right.
Which means that you don't have to take a science class unless it, or actually there's no real taught class, but you don't have to do things science-related if it doesn't interest you?
That's correct, but there could be classes. That's up to the initiation of the students. So it's not that there are never classes. It's that they're not required, and they only happen through students' initiation and their instigation.
So, Sue, does this affect college applications, or is Sudbury program made up of kids who, a lot of kids who, you know, could care less about going to college? They just really want to learn what they want to learn and then see what happens after that?
Well, you should probably talk to Mark about it, but from the schools that have been around, I know the Sudbury School outside of Boston, I believe it's the case with Fairhaven as well, that every kid who's applied to college has gotten in.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I should be so surprised by that, but I would assume that that's probably a regular reaction that
yeah.
you get. Feel free to dial up, by the way, if you have questions or comments on our topic today, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's 1-877-967-6762. The local crowd, 979-0919. And I see the phone's ringing right now for Sue to take a call. So let me ask you ladies real quick, how do the students learn what we might call the basics? Reading, writing, and what is it? Arithmetic.
How do they learn those?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, you don't have a teacher and you're not requiring them.
This is really a literate society. Words are everywhere. And, you know, kids want to be able to function in the world. And at some point, they recognize that they need to be able to read to do that. And so when kids are ready to read, they learn to do it. And, the schools, like anywhere else, have books. They have attendance sheets that they have to sign in. There are... there's a judicial process that sometimes involves writing down, you know, what happened between two people. And so they need to be able to read and write to function at the school like anywhere else. And so they eventually, you know, decide they need to learn that.
Yeah, but I would think that, in the public school system, there's an awful lot of kids who don't like, whatever they're called, word math problems. You know, if train A leaves going at 35 miles an hour and train B leaves going at 55 miles an hour and they're 125 miles apart, when will they meet? Most student kids, you know, abhor that kind of thing. But you would think that in a regular everyday society, you need to figure that out so that you can figure out where you need to be when if you're traveling.
Well, you have a lot more interest in figuring that out if you're actually going someplace and need to be there. I don't like those word problems myself, but I can get myself to the train station.
Fair enough. All right, we have our first caller there. We have Bonnie. Hey, Bonnie, how are you?
Whoops.
Jennifer. Maybe I should actually turn the phone line on. Hey, Bonnie.
Hey. I have several questions. First of all, I'd like to know how, and you can... rank these questions, if you will. How does this program teach social responsibility? What are the percentage of certified teachers/staff in this program? What are the percentage of college graduates from this program? And how do religious exemptions and immunizations square up? And how are students with learning and physical disabilities handled? And how is this school funded?
All right, those are all great questions. We'll probably only get to a few because I think just from conversations beforehand that Mark McCraig from the Fairhaven School may be better suited for a few of these. Pick your top two.
I think I'm interested mostly in how students with learning and physical disabilities are handled. And the other one would be the number, the percentage of certified slash teachers slash staff in this program. I know that in the public schools it is necessary for all teachers to be certified to teach in the public schools, and in some of the local private schools there is a move to also have a great deal of certification or a great deal of expertise in the area of education that they wish to teach. So those are two of my top questions.
All right, and I'll try and throw out a couple of the same, you know, a couple of your other questions or similar types later on in the program, okay?
Okay.
All right, ladies, fire away with Bonnie's questions.
Okay, yeah, as far as certification goes, you know, I think some private schools require certification, some don't. It does depend on if you're accredited, which we will not be accredited. But so we do not require staff to be accredited. And you know, we don't feel that this is what makes a teacher, that there are a lot of accredited teachers out there that may not be good teachers at all. And the most important thing is that people know how to relate to children, understand the philosophy of children learning independently, because that is something that you have to have a deep understanding of to be able to allow children to do this and to support them. And you know, having knowledge in different areas of subject matter is the secondary thing. And a staff member's role is to help children find resources, whether we have staff members that have the knowledge that students are seeking or not, but helping students find those resources, and it may be outside of the school sometimes.
All right, Sue, what about the disability question?
Well, I have to say I don't have any experience with that myself. You might be better to talk to Mark about that, because we're just starting and we haven't had that issue come up. But I know that there are schools that deal with it.
Would I be right in assuming that a private school doesn't have to be concerned about it if they choose not to be? I mean, this is a willful choice as to whether or not to send your child there.
So do you mean legally whether we accept children with disabilities?
No, I mean as legally as whether you have to make, I know I'm going to come off sounding like a real butthead, whether or not you have to make your bathrooms larger to meet the requirements, whether you have to build ramps inside to get in and out of your schools, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, there are certain coding requirements.
Even if you're a private school?
Yeah. I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we will toss that one out to Mark as well. 11:30 here on the wake-up call. I do want to also thank 45fix.com for their support today. If you do have a home improvement project, there's another way to find a contractor. It's 45fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate, no obligation estimates are available anytime. That's 45fix.com. The number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. All right, dial us up. 979-0919. Looks like there's somebody on the line. I'll grab it. No, he's telling me not to. I know what that is now. ladies, let me ask you, and Sue, we'll finish up with you and pretty shortly and get to Mark McCraig from the Fairhaven School in Maryland. Because a lot of the program today is about self-governance. One of Bonnie's questions was also had something to do with social responsibility. Talk about that briefly at what happens at the Friendship School, because I think that's a key part of the self-governance topic, and it seems to be what the homework that I did, it's a very key part of the theory as well.
Yeah, I think to me this is one of the things that I really like about the Sudbury model, is that the kids take responsibility for creating along with their staff, for creating a safe and respectful environment for themselves. And so, you know, just like adults don't want to be hit, they don't want to be called names, they don't want a project they're in the middle of doing to be wrecked by someone, the kids sit down and they discuss how they want their environment to be, and they come up together with what the rules are for being in that space together, how to respect each other's rights. And it's kind of the age-old question of human beings as social beings, how do we protect our individual freedoms and also respect the rights of others? And the kids work that out every day together. And they a lot of schools have a judicial system that's set up where if there's a grievance, you know, the kids write down what happens, and then a group of kids and staff meet together with the people involved, and they, you know, work things out.
All right. Sue, toss out the way that people can contact or a website or folks who are interested in a little more information on this for the local school, because obviously we're going to continue the conversation. Brenda Cowan here in the studio, Mark McCraig, we're going to switch over to him on the phone line representing a school that's been around for a little longer. So how can people find out more about the local school?
Yeah, that's a website, www.friendshipsudburyschool.org.
And Sudbury is S-U-D-B-U-R-Y.
That's right.
Not berry like the fruit.
Right.
All right, Sue, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For participating today, and good luck.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
All right. So we'll get Stu to get Mark on the phone line, and then we'll switch over. 11:33 here on the wake-up call. As we talk about student self-governance, a lot of the program today having to do with the Sudbury school model and how it's worked. And let's see.
Okay.
Mark, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on today. Mark McCraig, what is your role at the Fairhaven School in Maryland?
I'm a founder of the school, one of the founders, and certainly one of the administrative staff. And then from time to time, I'm also a teacher. One of the things I should probably clear up is that although we, in describing our school, we talk about staff members instead of teachers, part of the strategy with that is to clarify that these are very different kinds of schools. At the same time, though, I have, every year I've worked at Fairhaven, this is our eighth year, I've certainly assumed the role of teacher when a class gets started. And like right now, I'm doing a grammar and writing class, and we're about to start a poetry class, and then it's a more traditional-looking relationship.
Now, one of the things that I find interesting, by the way, if you want to dial in now, use the non-studio line. Stuart's here to help you out. 971-4096. We have Mark on the regular line. 971-4096 or the toll-free 1-877-WNRN rocks. One of the things that I found more interesting about the Sudbury, and let me back up, because I had this conversation with Brenda early on. Is it the Sudbury theory? Is it the Sudbury model? What's the proper terminology for this, like Montessori, et cetera? How would I refer to this?
I usually call it Sudbury model of education, Sudbury okay. model school, or Sudbury philosophy of education. It's interchangeable.
Oh, philosophy makes me sound smarter.
There you go.
As far as the Sudbury philosophy, I found it interesting that there's no age separation.
No, yeah, it's really one of the strengths of the school in that people are totally free to mix among different ages so that you don't have all the 10-year-olds in one room and all the 9-year-olds in one room, et cetera.
But the school,
in that sense, and a lot of other senses, I think the school is kind of a place for practicing life, because really, if you think about your life, there are no places in your life where you're with everybody your same age. And it's really one of the strengths of the school, because people learn from each other constantly at our school. We have about 75 students, and occasionally you'll see a couple of people of identical age together, but generally speaking, people are mixed up anywhere from 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds to 19-year-olds together, but generally closer. And, you know, you said calling it a philosophy makes you sound smarter. Well, there was a philosopher, Vygotsky, who talked about the zone of proximal development. And what that boils down to is that we learn a lot from people who are in the next age group up or the next age group down. And our schools really allow people to do that constantly, and it's quite exciting to see.
Are there any disadvantages to this? I would I guess I would expect some social disadvantages, because in the more traditional method, seems like, you know, the younger ages are always worried about the older ages being bullies and that sort of thing.
Remarkably, there aren't. We've had, in our 8 years, we really have had zero instances of bullying, like you would kind of, the sort of caricature of bullies on the playground or things like that. It just doesn't come up. The amount of responsibility the students take for each other's safety and well-being far outweighs any kind of picking that happens.
Do you think that has to do with the type of student and the family model that these students come from, rather than the educational model itself?
It's a good question. I think a family that has a strict authoritarian model in the household would certainly have quite an adjustment to join our school. So I think there are, we do attract families who might parent in a different style. But I think it has a lot to do with the amount of really power that the students can enact at school. They really do, when we say democracy, we mean it. It's not just a pro forma setup. Our students, like I say, we have 75 students and 8 staff members, and every significant decision of the school is made at the weekly school meeting, including in a couple of months, they're going to be deciding who to rehire for staff, and that's all done by one person, one vote. And what always amazes me is that the students vote in a thoughtful way and in a way that I may not agree with, but it's not done to undermine the school or to hurt each other or to anything to that effect. And that's what the democratic setting lets people do, learn how to be responsible citizens.
Well, let's get into that. 11:38 here on the Wake Up Call. If you are dialing in today, switch over to the main line, 971-4096. The toll-free line is available, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. If you're maybe you're listening on the new 103.1 down in Richmond, as we talk about student self-governance with Brenda Callen from the Friendship Sudbury School, ready to open up in Fluvanna County here in Virginia, and Mark McCraig from the Fairhaven School up in Maryland. The one student or one person, one vote.
Uh-huh.
I was asking the ladies earlier about not having a preset or enforced curriculum allowing students, I guess, part of the day could be spent hanging out, playing video games, et cetera. How, I think for a lot of adults, the question really boils down to, how do you expect a young student, now you may be talking something different when you get, well-versed teenagers, 15, 16, and I guess the school program goes up to 19, but how can you expect elementary school-aged children to make decisions that aren't as thoughtful and aren't as selfish when you're talking about things like what I'm going to do today, what the money for the school should be spent on, because that's also part of the one person, one vote program, correct? Is budgetary issues?
Absolutely. We give children a lot of credit and a lot of trust, and so far we've been rewarded over and over again by making that decision to give them that authority. Do they always make perfect decisions? Well, no, they don't. One of the things that our school does is embrace failure. It sounds like a paradox, but in a traditional setting, if you do something wrong and don't get the test right or whatever, you get an F, and it's it's seen as a bad thing. But I think if you look at life, we often learn the most from our mistakes. We don't encourage people to make mistakes, but they happen in life. And our schools are places for practicing life. Somebody might make a bad choice one day, and then they'll realize it or be told it by their friends or by one of us or whomever. And then the next day they arrive and they have the opportunity to make better choices. And what we see over and over again is that when people truly are trusted with the awesome responsibility of living their lives and educating themselves, they embrace it and they thrive, and it goes far beyond the 3 R's of reading, writing, and arithmetic. I mean, anybody knows that learning to read is a crucial skill in life. And they do that. But what they get at our school is this amazing experience of, like I said earlier, practicing life and having to make difficult decisions, figuring out how to be a social animal in a relatively safe setting.
I would think that no matter how positive things are overall, that you're bound to have a few students who take advantage of this free system. What happens to those students? Do they just suffer their own, you know, self-failure? Are they, and I'm not talking about some of the judiciary aspects, unless the judiciary aspects include, you know, never reading, always sitting around playing video games, and some things that adults more familiar with the traditional school system might find a waste of time.
Mm-hmm. At the end of our system, if you want to receive a diploma from our school, you have to write and defend a thesis. And the gist of the thesis is to that you have adequately prepared to be an effective adult in the larger community. Now, there's some vagueness to that on purpose, because it's a chance for each student to inventory how they've spent their time and then defend it in front of the community. So we have a very real system in place, so that someone's senior year, if you will, is spent, like I say, doing an inventory and saying, well, how have I spent my time, and has it been the right thing to do? And then if they want to get a diploma, they have to defend that thesis and be voted on by the assembly. Now, the assembly is a larger democratic body than the school meeting. It also includes parents who are out there in the world and who are ready to, I just got an email from a parent about this year's thesis defenses, and he's coming across pretty hardcore about it, which I think is great.
All right, 11:44 here on the Wake Up Call. Be right back.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, our Virginia Senator George Allen or Governor Mark Warner, legitimate presidential candidates for 2008? Should an area restaurant be concerned that their peanut shells on the floor policy might be fatal to an allergic child? And the architectural treasures of the often overlooked Stanton. The Hook, to report and to serve. Today's programming on WNRN, also brought to you by Five Guys Burgers and Fries, Seville Reader's Choice for Burgers, and rated by Zagat Restaurant Survey for 4 years running. Five Guys serves America's standard, fresh and handmade, from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., and open until 10, Fridays and Saturdays. Five Guys Burgers and Fries, behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center, coming soon to Hollymead Town Center and the Downtown Mall, Charlottesville. 975 Guys. All right, back to the topic at hand, student self-governance, with Brenda Cowan from the Friendship Sudbury School, opening soon down in Fluvanna, and Mark McCraig, Fairhaven School in Maryland. And we got a caller. Hey, caller, how are you? Whoops, I got to push all the buttons. I got buttons in the wrong spot today.
I want to return to my question regarding the certification of teachers. So let's change the language a little bit and say, by what standard are the staff / teachers measured in their ability to understand these children's needs? I'm confused about this. Can anybody come in who knows how to do something and they're expert in it, come in and teach? And the other question I have is, how exactly is this school funded and how much does it cost to go?
All right, hang on the line, caller.
Okay.
Mark?
Yes.
Did you hear any of that?
I did. I heard the questions. Let me take the easier one first. Our tuition is $6,880 for the year.
That's your school.
We're in the D.C. metro area, so actually we're one of the least expensive schools around, aside from those that are subsidized by large churches.
Hang on one second.
Who's qualified to staff? I can talk a little bit about our staff. The first thing is that a staff member has to be elected every year. We don't have tenure. And so if a new person approaches us and wants to work there, the first thing they have to do is visit the school for an extended amount of time. then our democratic community takes a look at them and kind of sees if they fit our needs. If we're weak on math instructors, for example, is this a person who can do that? Is this a person who's going to be good at managing the building? Is this a person who's going to be good at interacting with parents? Is this a person who's going to be good at doing the groundwork? Because our staff has to do all of the administration of the place and the instruction. But we certainly try to cover the kind of basic subject areas. Our staff members have to undergo a background check, too. It's kind of a state law, which I'm sure Virginia has, and I'm sure that Friendship is going to do as well.
Brenda, let me ask you, what is your school's tuition?
We are doing a totally ability-based tuition. So we're telling people that we're not turning down anybody for lack of finances. So it will depend on each family's financial situation, and each family will turn in a family tuition plan. And, you know, it could be...
Let's say I'm wealthy as all get out. What am I expected to pay?
Okay, we're saying, you know, $6,000 like Fairhaven is, if you would like to go with just a basic tuition rate, we're saying $6,000. And then if you think that you can't afford that, then you would go through a process of figuring out what you can, depending on some tools that we give each family to figure that out.
If I could jump in just for as far as the staffing question, too, one of the powerful things about this type of schooling, and we have people on staff who used to work in public schools or private schools, more traditional settings, one of the things that we don't have on staff is this phenomenon of the kind of dead weight teachers who are tenured and who may have been certified at some point, because every year the school meeting has the opportunity to vote someone out, and I am acutely aware of that accountability loop, which I think is much more immediate than some of the accountability loops that I see trying to be imposed on the larger school systems. So I really feel like I have to perform for my clients, and if someone didn't have the ability to teach the subject matter they were engaged to teach, or didn't have the ability to participate in the democratic meeting or to understand the school, then they would be voted out.
All right, I'm going to bring this caller back to life. Caller, are you still there?
Yeah, I am. But my question is, are these people master's prepared? Are they doctorate prepared?
Well,
are they baccalaureate prepared?
Let me ask you a question, because you're coming off, you're sounding like you have a real problem with this education model.
I'm asking questions. I'm very interested in it. I've worked in public schools and private schools where there have, in one of the private schools that I worked in, half the teachers were certified and the other half were, they all at least had a baccalaureate degree they all had baccalaureate degrees, but they were experts in their field, for example.
Do you feel that a parent should not be allowed to send their child to a private school that only had teachers with high school degrees if they wanted to?
I think that when we say that we're going to give our kids over for teaching and modeling to a person who is prepared at a high school level, I think that we're selling our children short. And I don't mean any disrespect, but I am very concerned that any school that starts up is in an alternative fashion have some credentialing of their staff. Now, a person who's going to look after buildings and grounds or the cafeteria or something like that, buildings and grounds doesn't necessarily need to have a baccalaureate degree. An AD degree might be adequate in order to help them manage their budgets and that sort of thing and handle resources. But I highly suspect that a person who is only prepared as a high school graduate would not possess the resources or the know-how to model and teach young people. And I don't offer this with any amount of disrespect. Utilize those people as teachers' aides, if you will, and encourage them to credential themselves so that they can continue within the philosophy of this school. That's what I'm interested in.
All right. Well, I'm going to let I'm going to let Brenda and Mark address those questions. Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to fire up first?
Well, I'll just mention that there are parents all over this country and all over the world that homeschool their children. And, you know, and certainly in Virginia, it is not required that you have any type of degree. You know, all you need to do is write a letter to the school board to say why you feel like you are qualified to educate your child. And I think that there are a lot more important things than having a degree. And, you know, that can be helpful. But, I think there are a lot of people with degrees that don't have an understanding of even how to educate children in the traditional way. So, yeah, that's my opinion that a degree does not get you there. And
I also find it, if the parent chooses to send their child to this program and you're a proper parent, then you've done your research on it and have chosen to send your children here regardless of whether or not the teachers or volunteers have a baccalaureate degree, as opposed to the traditional method where you're forced to send your child to the public school system. I can see where that might be the case. Mark, what's your take on it?
These are really legitimate questions, I'm going to disagree with some of the positions of the questioner, but when we start talking about these kind of schools, people naturally conjure up images and ideas about traditional schooling, and so I have a couple of takes on it. One of the Sudbury Valley School, which we haven't referred to yet, is in Massachusetts and has been doing this model for 40 years. And what they do, as far as staffing and credentialing, if you will, is that they assign people life experience points in terms of compensation, actually. So if you've lived beyond a certain amount of years, for each, I think every 4 or 5 years, let's say, just for the sake of example, then you get a little bump in salary. What that says to me and what that equates is the more you've lived and the more things, interesting things you've done in your life, the more you know and the more valuable you are as a staff member at this kind of school. Now, on our staff, we certainly have a majority of college graduates, and a variety of degrees have worked there, and some masters. I believe one of my colleagues has a PhD. And those are valued. But at the same time, life experience is valued. So travel and different work experiences, artistic ability, these kind of things really add to the fabric of our staff. And what we've done is we've kind of broadened the concept of a person who should be around young people in terms of educating them. We like to think of our education as being a much broader, more useful one. And really, when you start thinking about Friendship Sudbury School, you need to start asking yourself, what are the aims of education? What is my intention for my children? I was taking a walk this morning and thinking about it. Do you want merely for your child to maximize his or her earning capacity in our economy? Well, then you might not want to look into Friendship Sudbury. But if you want to have a successful, content person who's able to take on the challenges of life and kind of move through difficult times and good times with a lot of experience, then you should really think about this kind of schooling.
All right, you are listening to 91.9 WNRN Charlottesville and 89.9 WNRS FM, Sweetbriar, Amherst, Lynchburg. And we want to thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support today. Blue Ridge Graphics, Mead Avenue at East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. 11:56 here on the wake-up call. Stay tuned, because at noon, George Bell will be here for Les Temps Purdue, the best of 80s and 90s alternative. He refuses to play Janet Jackson, Journey, or the Bangles, but you might hear the Pixies, the Clash, or Smashing Pumpkins, and requests are always welcome. Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. All right. Push the right buttons. We got Shannon. Hey, Shannon.
Hey.
Thanks for hanging on.
You're welcome. I called to offer support for the folks with the school. I've been listening, and I'm a homeschooler. This is my second year homeschooling. I still have a child in public school and a stepson who will be graduating next year in public schools. I feel like I understand just so well what these folks are trying to do for our children. My son is, quote unquote, a third grader, the one that I homeschool, and he was labeled LD in the school system by the school system. They worked with him for 2 years with no progress. And you know, he had special education teachers. They had master's degrees. They were not able to help my son decode words, learn phonics. He was unable to read. He read more like a kindergartner when he was in second grade. Me having him at home, he has been able to just blossom. And it's in an environment where he's comfortable. He is not put on display or pitted against his peers in the class. That creates such a hierarchy in the classroom that kids, they don't want to learn when they are put on display. You have some who are able to achieve to the highest degree. That was myself in school. But it really created a social monster. I couldn't accept defeat or failure, you know, in my own personal experience. Then I have a son who is quote-unquote LD. He's at the bottom of the class. And when he is put on display doing spelling baseball, for example, all the many games that they play within the classroom, well, he learns that he's a failure before he even begins. And so he really opted out. He didn't want to participate. It didn't foster a desire within him to learn. And that's the essence of what these schools is trying to foster, is that desire, that encouragement. A child needs to be encouraged so that their natural abilities can emerge and they do succeed. And I can say that I have had much success homeschooling my son because I understand him. And I am a high school graduate. I did go to college to become a teacher, but I dropped out of college. I decided I wanted to have a family. And once I did that, made that decision, my kids started going to school, I saw what a failure public school can truly be for many children. Not all. There are some kids who succeed, and they do go on in life to have great paying jobs, but they really don't have a compassionate or spiritual nature, which, you know, maybe that I feel is another aspect of this school. So my encouragement to them, I feel like I understand what they're trying to do, and I think it's a good thing.
Well, thanks for your call, Shannon.
You're welcome.
All right, 11:59 here on the wake-up call. I want to thank Brenda and Mark for coming in today. George is up next with his rockin' 80s and 90s music. Any last point that either of you would like to make?
Well, I just wanted to say if anybody wants to contact us and any further questions that people wanted to call in and weren't able to, but you can call me, not right now, but maybe tomorrow, at 540-894-5117. And my email is friendshipschool@gmail.com. And our website, once again, is www.friendshipsudburyschool.com.
And Mark, what's the, for a school that's been around a little longer, what's the Fairhaven School's website?
Oh, it's fairhavenschool.com. And I just wanted to say we had a professor from Towson University just made a film about our school, a documentary. It's feature length, and it's entirely student voices talking about their experience. It's called Voices from the New American Schoolhouse. You can email me, Mark, M-A-R-K, at fairhavenschool.com if you'd like a copy of it. It's a long conversation and thought process to understand these places, and if you're listening, you're just getting started. So take a look on the internet at sudval.org and different school sites and start to read about us.
All right. Thanks to both of you for participating today.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks to Stuart for getting all the technology up and going. George is up next.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon Gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.rlc.net. The wake-up call is produced by Catherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.